Good afternoon, I'm Barry Graham, and Education Matters to Everyone. Today we continue our look into the challenges and issues facing today's educators and how they are overcoming them in the classroom. A new school year looms in just a matter of weeks. What's it like to get kids off their summer schedule and back into the learning mode? And what are the challenges some teachers face with summer learning loss? Our in-studio guests are Heidi Lewis, Director of Elementary Curriculum and Instruction with the Portsmouth Public Schools, and Tony Caranta, who was diagnosed at an early age with dyslexia and has mentored students with the reading disorder. Engaging students and getting them ready to learn on this edition of Education Matters. Tony, let's start with you and your experiences. When were you diagnosed as dyslexic?
Yeah, I want to say it was probably in kindergarten or first grade. My mom's dyslexic and it's hereditary. And so my dad knew very early on that there were signs that I was dyslexic. One of the first ones was rhyming. I did not know how to rhyme and did not understand rhyming for quite a long time. I don't know when. Maybe I still don't fully understand it, but at some point I picked it up. And so I think it was first grade. He said, I'm going to give you three words and you're going to tell me which one doesn't rhyme. And he said, fox, box, or bear. I remember thinking that I had no idea which one rhymed. And my brother, who is 2 years younger, was in the other room watching TV and he's hollering, bear, it's bear. So I think my dad knew right away. And so at some point I was tested. I don't fully remember what the test was. I remember going to a trailer and answering questions, and it came back I was dyslexic.
Let's talk about the challenges you faced through your primary education. Describe some of the challenges that this presented to you in the classroom.
The major challenge through elementary school was reading. It took a very long time to read, and I would say that I don't even know if I'm ever really good at reading, but very hard, very difficult to read throughout all of elementary school. And it mainly had to do with the sounds of words, or the sounds of letters, I guess. I could not sound out a word. I did not know or understand the sounds that letters made to then break down a word. So what I would do was I would look at a word and I would think, what are the words that are inside of that word that I know? And then I would guess at what I thought this word could be.
So let's take a basic assignment, say third or fourth grade, reading a story. Describe the process. You know, I know when I was in elementary school, you know, that was very much a part of my primary education, reading in class, reading out loud. So let's take a basic assignment, say in third or fourth grade, a story that, say, had to be read, and perhaps, you know, you had questions to answer after it. Describe the process you would go through for that.
Absolutely torturous. A lot of times I would get extra time, and then I would usually work with, the teacher would work with me, where we would read it line by line, almost always out loud, because I discovered, I guess, some point that I understood and comprehended stuff when I read it out loud. So that usually resulted in doing that after school or during a break or something like that, or I was sometimes excused to go do that elsewhere, because obviously you can't read in the middle of class when everyone else is trying to read. I would say that for myself, if I had to read it on my own, very little chance that I comprehended very much of anything. And if I did not know a word, I literally would just skip it, which is difficult to understand a sentence if you skip most of the words. And then my worst nightmare, though, was when you had to read out loud in class. And usually they would say, we're going to read this story out loud. Everyone's going to take a paragraph. It starts with the first person. And that was terrible. And what I would do is I would count the number of paragraphs I was based on where it was in the seat. And then I would get to my paragraph and I would hope that it was a one sentence paragraph. But then I would solely focus on my paragraph, what the words that I didn't know in that and what I thought my best guess could be for that word, so then I didn't look ridiculous in front of the rest of the class.
I can imagine it was a little bit torturous for that. So how about some of the strategies that parents, teachers used to really help you? Now, you and I have talked before coming in today. You and I have talked. I know you mentioned there was extensive tutoring, but talk about the process that enabled you. Obviously, successfully, you did complete your primary education. You completed a college degree. You are today working in a field that requires a lot of script writing and a lot of reading and writing. What are the strategies that quite obviously worked?
I think, truthfully, reading out loud was huge. And then having things read out loud to me was also very big. Audiobooks were huge. And there was a time, I think now probably every textbook would do it, but there was a time when you could get a textbook that was in audio version, and there were very select few, and this was more, I think, when I was in high school, but that was like a game changer when that happened. Before that, I would try and read it out loud, or I would have a teacher or somebody read it out loud to me, and usually I was able to comprehend that as long as it didn't go on for a very long period of time, and then I would just completely lose interest or not listen. But I think that was huge. So reading out loud was definitely something very early on. I think second, which this is something I didn't discover until much later in life, because I do enjoy reading books. So then what I discovered was the feeling of completion. So when I looked at a book and then someone was reading a book that was 200, 300, 400 pages, I was like, oh my God, that would take me 3 months to read that. And it gets exhausting when you're reading the same thing. And so what I had discovered later in life was reading articles. When I got my first job, I obviously spent a lot of time at a desk. And so I started reading news articles for information, but also just for enjoyment. And what I discovered was after like what felt, I was there several years, doing that a couple times a week, I now, my reading got a lot better because I was doing it. But I also felt like I wasn't as scared to read something that was a little bit longer because I was completing it because it was only two pages. And the feeling of completion let me be like, well, I'm going to do another one now because I did that, rather than kind of that you don't get that feeling of completion through a chapter. So
just joining us, it's Education Matters. Tony Quaranta is our guest. Also, Heidi Lewis, Director of Elementary Curriculum and Instruction with the Portsmouth Public Schools. Thank you both so much for joining us. And Heidi, if, let's say that this situation was evolving inside an elementary classroom, yes, in Portsmouth today, and I know it does.
Yes,
very, very often, I as a former teacher, I know how this suddenly evolves. What would be done?
Well, and I will say to you, I appreciate Tony sharing his story. And a lot of those things are still happening today. Fortunately, we, as licensed teachers, we have to go through a certification for dyslexia, which I will share. You know, I've been in education almost 20 years. When I first came in, we didn't have to go through that certification. So now we are seeing, you know, it's important that we're familiar with dyslexia and how to look for the signs. So as you said, working with your teacher, that's an amazing point for any student to have that opportunity. But in working with your teacher one-on-one, that gives an opportunity for that teacher to actually hear and see where do we need to fill in those gaps. So we have a lot of the one-on-one teaching. We have the small group teaching inside of the classroom, and then the multi-sensory. So as Tony mentioned, you have to hear it as well. So we have audio stations as well in our classroom. So students not only hear from the teacher, maybe a peer they're hearing it from, but also through the audio. So very similar things that Tony went through. We're going through those things now, but now we're noticing it sooner because now we're becoming educated.
Well, you beat me to the question, which I was going to say, because of the certification that teachers have had to go through this process, now they're picking up on the fact that, you know, these students are struggling and have this this reading disorder.
Yes, sir, because previously I think that we had students unfortunately falling through the cracks because we weren't able to identify it. And for Tony to be identified at first grade, I think is miraculous. You had an amazing teacher. So I definitely think that's what's helping it be more on our radar so we can help our students earlier.
Let's take this to a broader picture about reading and literacy. Today, how do we engage kids into reading and, you know, helping to improve literacy? You hear so much from parents, from educators. How do we get the kids off these devices? Yeah. How do we engage kids today in reading and literacy?
Well, I will tell you, Tony hit it on the nail. We have to use topics that they're interested in. So, and we have to make it an adventure. So, for instance, I'm also a parent, so I am a mother of three. So one thing that I would do with my children is we would go to the library during the summer, and I would allow them to kind of float around the library, pick books that were interesting to them. So, and we do the same thing at schools when the children have library day. We try to make sure it's age appropriate. So we kind of direct them, you know, this is a good site for kindergarten through second grade, but we want them to pick something that they're interested in. One, it's something they're going to want to read for fun, which we don't have that happening as much as we used to. So we want them to do that. But also if they're engaged in it, they may have prior knowledge already, which helps with comprehension.
So is there a process you think that teachers today are actively using to draw kids into to reading?
I would say yes and no. I think that some teachers do survey their students and ask what their interests are. And if they notice that on that survey inventory that a student is not interested in reading, then it's what are you interested in, so that you can kind of loop that back into the reading process.
Why is elementary curriculum and instruction perhaps the most crucial part of the educational process?
It is the absolute foundation. Education, of course, begins at home, but that structured education takes place from kindergarten on. And in kindergarten, of course, you're learning your phonics and you're learning how to start off with your sentence structures and comprehension. So that it is the foundation of all.
So if you're going back to Tony's situation, because he was diagnosed so early, I guess that foundation was easily laid there at that point.
Yes, sir.
Let's look at learning loss over the summer months. It's always an issue of getting kids engaged back into learning. There's this 10-week break, and as a former teacher myself, I know getting kids back into the process of learning in late August, early September was always very difficult. But has that been exacerbated, you think, by technology and the fact that these kids really do shut down for these 10 weeks over the summer? Has that been exacerbated by technology devices that kids are seemingly on excessively over the summer months?
I would say that there are definitely parts of it that it can be attributed to technology, because I think it depends on what the technology is. So if they are playing video games and they're just for entertainment value, I think that that is definitely going to have a negative impact. But if you have perhaps an app on your child's iPad or tablet that is more educational, which that's hard to do because you have to do a lot of monitoring as a parent, but you're having to monitor to make sure that this piece of technology is being used effectively. And then, of course, monitoring how much time are they spending on video games or YouTube, because they watch lots of videos, and making certain that those videos are going to be positive within their learning and not a complete 10-week shutdown. And I will say I've noticed it in the secondary realm more so as a shutdown than with the younger students because of that parent monitoring.
So the elementary students are more prepared to be engaged back in the learning process when they get back into the classroom.
I think they're more engaged for the social, which gets them in the door, and then they're ready to learn. I think that they're still excited for school. I have a rising first grader who is counting down. When do I get to go and meet my new teacher? And when do I get to start learning and things like that? I think as those of us that have been, I've been K-12, been in that secondary realm, they're there for social, but not so much excited about being in school to learn.
If you just join me, Tony Quaranta is with me. Also, Heidi Lewis, Director of Elementary Curriculum and Instruction with the Portsmouth Public Schools. Tony is a mentor to students who have been diagnosed as dyslexic. And we are talking really about reengaging students, but not only in the internal learning process, but especially around the issues of reading and literacy. Heidi, how are teachers best prepared to create different learning environments for kids? As Tony just mentioned, he learned differently. It was a very different process for him. How can teachers best prepare these different environments for kids? It can be a daunting task.
Yes, sir. And I think it really has to go about that training. And one thing in Portsmouth Public Schools, what we do is we're providing a lot of training to our teachers. So this summer, we had an opportunity to not only work with teachers, but our administrators and talk about what does that learning environment look like? What should stations look like? What type of stations should you have in your classrooms? So we're giving the administrators an opportunity to be able to go back and say, okay, we've seen that this is going to work. So maybe we need to have a station with more manipulatives when it comes to math or reading. And maybe this station, we need to have a larger station for the teacher. We call it a horseshoe table because, you know, sometimes you can only fit a couple of students there. Maybe we need to add more chairs there based on the data that you've used or received from the previous school year. What is it that we need to structure in this classroom? Do we need a reading quarter? Do we need a reading mat? So those are conversations that we actually have not only during the summer, but throughout the year to make sure that we're meeting all of our students' needs.
Let's get into the trenches. And what, can you tell me perhaps a strategy or something that you have heard from the classrooms that's been extremely successful within the past few years, perhaps since we came back after the shutdown, the pandemic, something that really does seem to be working as far as engaging the kids, or a particular specific strategy that you're hearing about?
Small group. And that is whether it's reading or math. We small group setting, because you have to have that teacher attention. But small group has been our key that we're seeing impact.
All right. So last fall, the state launched a $418 million tutoring effort to try and recover from declining SOL scores. Can you tell me about Portsmouth's specific efforts and what's known as All-In VA, the tutoring effort?
Yes, sir. We have All-In tutoring, which actually we have included a modified schedule. So that makes certain that all of our students are actually receiving that All-In tutoring time. We struggled with having some students come before and after school, so we have that available as well, but we wanted to make sure we were able to reach all of our students. And that was based on, of course, we were given a data graph to follow as far as what students would qualify for All-In tutoring and what students didn't need to have that tutoring, but maybe an acceleration. So in addition to that, what we do is we have tutors that come in and will help support teachers in the classroom. And right now we're using university instructors to actually help us with that additional human resource. We also use Lexia Learning, which is a resource online that the students are able to use for mathematics. And then for our reading, and this is more middle school, but for reading, what we actually have is a tutoring program where the students actually work one-on-one with a tutor for 15 minutes, and that's online, so that they're able to kind of work on items that have been determined by their data.
And you did mention both reading and math, which are the two real targeted areas that experienced the dramatic decline in scores during the shutdown. Tony, cycling back to you. Now, you have mentored kids. We're talking about tutoring here. You have mentored kids who have been diagnosed with dyslexia. What are some of the things that you tell the kids? What's a good methodology in tutoring?
It honestly, it's so great to hear everything that Heidi's saying, because my methodology with tutoring was only comes from being a kid with dyslexia. One of my methods was to try and engage them with a topic that they liked. Mm-hmm. And so a family friend asked me if I could speak with their child with dyslexia. And that's what sparked this thing of like, well, maybe I should try and tutor kids with dyslexia. And so I reached out and I assumed that I would be working with elementary school children, which is, I feel like, probably more of where my reading level is, that I would be able to help them out. And they said they had a unique situation in which they had a 15-year-old that was looking for help. And so I said that I was willing to help, but I don't know if I will be able to really help them out a ton. But in terms of reading, which wasn't completely true, but what one of the strategies that I put into, or that we worked on, was doing something that he liked. So he had his schoolwork that he had to read through, which we would read through it. But to get him to do it, it was reading them out loud, and he really enjoyed sports. So we would read a lot of sports articles out loud. And that was something that worked because he was engaged. He wanted to know more about his team or the sport or whatever it was. And I think, too, one of the things that was difficult for me in school was that there was a test, or there was a, you know, whatever it was afterwards, that you had to try and comprehend everything and then answer a question about it that might or might not be something that you pull out of it, or whatever it is. And so I think for him, it was the relaxation of reading something that was for enjoyment. And at the end of it, I was not going to ask him, well, like, how many stats did somebody have, or something like that. It was just strictly for him to hear himself reading and for practice. So I think that's probably the biggest strategy that I implemented.
Heidi, tell me, if you could, what will Portsmouth be zeroing in on this school year?
Well, it's hard to say what zeroing in on, because I will say we have very big hopes and dreams to kind of fill in those gaps, that misconceptions and all this background knowledge our students may have lost or are trouble gaining. So we are focusing, of course, on reading, but encompassing writing. So we want to kind of get back to, and this will tell my age a little, I went to school in the 80s, so we wrote a lot during that time. So kind of bringing back that if you read something, then you have to write about it, tell a friend about it. So that way our students have better comprehension. So we're really focusing on making certain that we're reading in every class, math, science, and social studies, and even in the electives. And we also are encouraging our students to write on a daily basis. We actually have a non-negotiable for writing where we have gone through and we've trained all of our specialists so they can go out in all the different content areas and train those teachers so that we're all writing the same way as well. So we're using a similar graphical organizer. We're using a four-square model so we can teach students this is how you write. But first, we just have to get them writing about what they're hearing and learning about.
And that will be a primary objective focus for this coming 24-25 school year.
That is something that worked for me as well growing up. And so one of the things I had to do was, after I read it out loud, I was required to summarize it in my own words.
Yes.
That might not be for an assignment. I hated that. But it literally taught me everything that I now know and do and able to do. So it's really great to hear.
Bring it back to classics. I think that's kind of where we are. And I will tell you, I think that will empower our students because now I'm able to write about it. And then you can take it a step further and say, okay, well, now you can make up a story and you know, it's a little creative writing, but we really have to get them back into appreciating what they're reading.
Tony, despite the difficulties you had in your education, you finished college. Do you use some of these same strategies in your career today? And by the way, I want you to take the opportunity to explain your career, something I have neglected to do while you've been with us here.
No, without a doubt. So I do video production and I am a producer. So what I end up doing is I oversee the whole production from start to finish and make sure that everything happens, make sure that the crew is good, make sure whoever needs to be hired. Every locations, I kind of dabble a little bit in everything. And so, yes, 100%, I use this every day. Whether it be writing down something that I heard on a call, I will write down a summary of it. One of the big things that I do is I proofread my emails, which I did not proofread my papers, but I proofread my emails multiple times because my brain, if I do it quickly, will still leave out words. It'll still miss certain things. And so if I'm sending an email out to multiple people or to a very important person, I want to make sure that it's very clear what I was trying to say because it doesn't always translate from my brain to the paper. So I will reread multiple things, rewrite them multiple times, and then also giving myself time with the reading. You know, obviously, this is much different than school. Learning how to prioritize, okay, I have a lot of reading to do that's due in 2 weeks. I'm not going to do it Thursday the night before. I need to start doing it. And I learned that from school because while some people would be able to read 50 pages in one night, I still cannot read 50 pages in one night. That would take me 24 hours and I would not make whatever I had to do. So that was all stuff that I took from school that I applied today.
And Heidi, I think teachers would recognize that limitation in a student. They would make the adjustment for that individual student inside the classroom, like he just described.
Definitely. And I think we see that on a regular basis. If you have a student that needs more time or if you have to carry an assignment over to the next day, there's even times, you know, when I know for my own child that the teacher has said, you know, maybe she doesn't come in exactly at 8:45. Can she come in at 8:30? That'll give her more time to write and process. So, you know, as long as you're communicating with families and letting them know this is why your child's having this length of time, or, you know, I noticed this because it may be some additional things that might be going on that we have not caught up yet. And we need to have those conversations. Does this child need to be assessed? So to ensure that they are receiving the proper services. But on a day-to-day basis, teachers will make that change, whatever's going to help make their students successful.
Let's talk about the time. I'm sure some teachers have responded about the time aspect that this requires. It's a lot of planning. It's a lot of thought. It's a lot of implementation. And the question becomes, do I really have the time to implement this?
That is a concern. And actually what we're doing in our office and Department of Curriculum and Instruction is we're looking to see how can we filter in things where we're taking things off teachers' plates because we know time is limited. So we look at possibly giving activities. Currently, we're working on revising our curriculum and instruction for K-12 instruction, and we're giving activities. Here's some suggested activities that you can do, because I will tell you, as a former teacher, coming up with activities alone takes a lot of time, and then creating them. So here's some activities that you can use. Here's some recommended assessment questions. So we're trying to fill that in for them.
Let's talk about Portsmouth's STEM efforts. First off, can you describe efforts inside the system with STEM?
Yes, sir. So we have a STAR-based system in Portsmouth. I don't know if you all are familiar with that, but our students in grades 4, 5, and 6 actually get an opportunity to filter through our STAR-based program, where they get to learn different components of STEM. So they'll be able to, for instance, shoot off rockets, but they learn the process. And then, of course, they have to write about it, and then they get out there and they get to build their rockets and shoot their rockets off. And we have that program for them. But in addition to that, this summer, we have summer camps every year. But this year, what we did for our summer school, our summer enrichment, is we gave a STEM block for 45 minutes so that they can have an opportunity to enjoy math and reading, but have a little break and say, you know, 45 minutes a day, I get to enjoy that science hands-on experience. So we really embrace STEM. And in Portsmouth, we actually are looking at expanding it. So that'll be forthcoming soon. So we definitely want to give students an opportunity to see how science works and how nature works. So we give those opportunities to all of our students.
What I love you're talking about here, though, yes, there is this emphasis on the science and math, of course, the STEM efforts. But you're not forgetting that literacy component there. You were talking about writing about the experience.
Yes, sir.
And so that will be the full experience of as far as an attempt to increase your literacy and reading scores.
Yes, and increase science and social studies scores, because even in social studies, we're talking about, and I think, yeah, as a social studies teacher, social studies and reading goes hand in hand. We have to read and we have to be able to write and get that timeline together. So we are seeing that reading and writing across the core.
As a former social studies teacher, I applaud you. I applaud those efforts. Tony Quaranta has been my guest, along with Heidi Lewis. And if somebody wanted more information about Portsmouth Public Schools, Heidi, I'll start with you. How could they do that?
Yes, they can check our division website at ppsk12.us. They can also take an opportunity to follow us on Twitter at PortsVAschools.
All right. And Tony, an organization I know that you have worked with and are familiar with as far as dyslexia?
Yes. So it's in Virginia Beach here, Sinkin' Dyslexic Foundation.
All right. And they have a website and you can find out more information about that. Okay. I will only let you both go if you promise you will come back and we can do this again. And once again, revisit the importance of making sure that kids are learning. I'll only let you go if you promise you'll come back and do this again.
Of course. It's absolute pleasure.
Would love to.
Thank you to Heidi Lewis with the Portsmouth Public Schools and also Tony Quaranta for being with us today. Portsmouth Public Schools are stakeholders in Heretta, which holds the license for the WHRO stations. Special thanks to audio engineer Jordan Christie, also to WHRO CEO Bert Schmidt, Chief Content Officer Heather Mazzoni, Chuck Dowd, who is Senior Director of Audio Content and Audience Strategy, and also Operations Manager Jeff Sander. Our theme music is an original composition by Todd Washburn. This show is on demand at WHRV.org. Our next show will be in October with Dr. Eli Bracey, Superintendent of Portsmouth Public Schools, as our guest. I'm Barry Graham, and remember, education matters to everyone.